Hey friends, we have a new sponsor today, and I want to make sure that you support them because they make Hansel Minutes possible. RavenDB. It's a document database that's non-relational and fully transactional. It's available for Windows and Linux with official client APIs for .NET, the JVM, Go, Ruby, Node.js, and Python. RavenDB is designed for high performance, handling tens of thousands of requests even on a single node. Now, RavenDB is capable of on-the-fly optimization, dynamic indexes, and much more. It has a fully loaded GUI, which means it's simpler to operate, and you don't need, you know, arcane incantations on the command line. It just works. It's fast, and it's right. Download your free community edition at ravendb.net. That's RavenDB.net. I hope you check it out. Hi, this is Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes, and today I'm talking with Lynn Tai from KeyValues.com. How are you?
So good. I'm excited.
So you are an engineer. You learned to code a couple years ago, but before that, you were a PhD candidate with a background in neuroscience.
That is correct. Previous life of mine.
So you've done freelance web development, and you've also done neuroscience. So you kind of understand the tech mind as well as maybe how techies think.
Strangely, I feel like in general, I've always been kind of drawn to the types of people who were more classically, stereotypically into tech. Mm-hmm. But yeah, lots of weirdos in science and tech.
Well, and so I noticed when we as techies try to find a place to be, we're forced to go to jobs boards and search with keywords and hopefully find our tribe.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people don't actually even try to find their tribe that way because they know it's hard to do that. Mm-hmm. Such a good segue. Yeah, I think about this all the time. And I think the hardest part actually is really when you're trying to find your tribe and you've already kind of set out on a path and it's heading in a way that it's farther and farther from the place you'd actually like to be. It's really hard to kind of correct and do like, you know, a complete 180 or, you know, a hard turn.
Mm-hmm.
Looking at job boards is certainly sometimes the last place you'd go.
Yeah. Well, what's a way to find out? Is it just have as many interviews as possible? Because even those interviews come out really awkward.
Well, I guess there's like a few steps. I'm thinking like just in terms of like what do you want to do day to day? And so like obviously, so, you know, I think about this a lot with key values because it's very specific to finding an engineering job. But I mean, just since you talked about, you know, I was previously a PhD candidate, I dropped out. That's very, very sad for my entire family. But I think just at a bigger level, like a higher level of like, what career do you want to do? And like, what do you want to do day to day? And like, if you're, you know, a web developer now, like, what if you want to be a landscaper or something like wildly different? Mm-hmm. I think that's something that actually probably for a lot of people does come from having lots of conversations. But also just trial and error and kind of, I mean, yeah, there's no real shortcut to just the experience of knowing what you want and don't want, what you like and what you don't like. Mm-hmm. So it depends on what level you're talking about here.
Right. Well, when people go to keyvalues.com, they see it says find an engineering team that shares your values. And you pick some values here, and the values are pretty diverse. Like there's an engineering section, but you're really expressing like what you care about, and you're hoping that that company also cared about that. There's places like, yeah, we pair program, you know, we do, you know, extreme programming, or we have a high quality code base. Those are all things that, you know, I could care about. But like, I love some of these. One of them is like light meetings. Like we value, like we as a company care about not doing a lot of meetings.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think there, it's the whole, for me, the reason why I started this is when I was looking for jobs. So yeah, as you mentioned, I was a freelancer. At some point I was like, maybe I should get a full-time job and be a full-time employee somewhere. And when I sat down to look, like, I mean, you mentioned this, job boards was one place I went, and they don't have anything like this, like not at all. It's like, what tech stack do you work with? What job title might you want? And like, what industry, broad strokes, like education or health? And those are like, I mean, that's nice to be able to filter, I think, to some degree, but it's really more like, what is my day-to-day? It doesn't matter if it's like my favorite industry and using my favorite technology. If I have meetings every day, I'm going to hate it. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, this was kind of trying to, I talked to tons of people and just figuring out what are the actual things that make someone love their job or hate their job, or, you know, make them start wondering if there are new jobs that they should consider. And it's yeah, something like light meetings is totally, yeah, it's very real.
And I think that there's this term we hear a lot in engineering, which is culture fit. And sometimes I feel that that is abused, that term culture fit. It's like, well, you know, Lynn's not really kind of like our kind of people. Like, what does that even mean, right?
Yeah.
It feels like you're trying to quantify that and give it meaning.
Yeah. I mean, I think for sure. I mean, to be honest, before I started Key Values, I didn't realize that the term culture fit is just totally rejected by a lot of people in the people space, talent space, HR, definitely in the D&I space, because it's something that you can kind of, for a not valid reason, say it's just not a good culture. You're not a good culture fit. And it's, you know, it's an umbrella term that covers all good and bad things. Mm-hmm. But this is definitely, it's not so much what I would call culture fit, is more just like value alignment. Mm-hmm. I think that people that you might not necessarily want to be friends with or live with or hang out, you know, outside and on the weekends with, but they might be someone who really, really genuinely enjoy working with, you are compatible in that sense. And so I think it's more, yeah, I mean, it is fit, but yeah, I guess I'm moving away from that term as well.
Yeah. Well, I like that. I mean, like, so when you said value alignment, like my first internal reaction was like, that sounds like an MBA kind of suit type term. Like, you know, I would never say value alignment like casually at a dinner party, but at the same time, that's precise.
It's exactly what it is. Yeah.
It is exactly what it is. So I need to get over my that's a suit term, and they say, yeah, I want their values to align with mine. I always like to joke with my wife, when you're trying to meet someone, like I've met my wife, is you have emotional baggage, right? So you just want someone whose baggage matches your baggage.
Pretty much, actually. It's I've never thought about it that way, but that's pretty accurate. And it's just like, do you care about the same things? It's the simplest way of saying it.
Yeah. The amount of work, I'm going to gush a little bit. The amount of work that has been put into these categories or these tags, I'm not really quite sure what you would call them, these values, really. The amount of work that's been put into the text behind them is huge. Do you have a background in HR? Because you've really...
I'm blushing. No, thank you. I do not have a background in HR or recruiting. I am, as you said, I'm a, you know, PhD dropout turned developer turned into, whatever, you know, just trying to help other people navigate their job search and navigate their career also. Mm-hmm. But no, I think it's, I've always enjoyed writing. So it's been nice to find an outlet for it. Yeah, I think there was a good amount of writing in my research days, because, you know, you obviously publish papers, but it's a different type of writing.
Yeah, it is a different kind of writing. And there are terms here. So when you go to keyvalues.com and you hover over them, there is a like a tooltip that'll pop up that'll give you even more context. So there's multiple layers to these things. It's not just keywords, right? Mm-hmm. So if I go and hover over, you know, work-life balance, like we all know what that means, but I can hover over it, and then keyvalues.com will say, like, what does keyvalues.com mean? Well, we mean, it says, engineers have the flexibility and freedom and support to be fulfilled and enjoy both their personal and professional lives. Okay, good. That aligns with my understanding of what like work-life balance means.
Yeah, it's funny, actually. I made those tooltips in the very beginning, I think before I'd even launched Key Values last year in September. Mm-hmm. But in a way, I feel like all of these terms are very vague. And the whole point of looking at companies and how they define them is to dig into that. Work-life balance is like could not have been a better example. I think it's like, it's easy for us to all agree. Like, we all know what that is and what that looks like, but it's actually really easy to be on the wrong page or on a different page. Mm-hmm. So that something that I is like a perfect example. So I think a lot of people consider work-life balance to be, you know, you work 40 hours or less a week. That seems reasonable.
In the U.S., I think that's a fair statement.
Yes. Yeah, you're right. It's a little lower, actually, in other European countries. But for me, I actually would find it much easier to balance my life if I worked longer, but had the ability to choose when and where I worked. Oh. So like, you know, like a 9-to-5 where I have to be in seat at a certain place is like, it's feels oppressive for me. And I don't know why that's, you know, I have no idea where that came from. I think it's just something about who I am. In a way, that's why I was also drawn to science. Like, you just go to the lab when you do, and it doesn't matter when. And so it's definitely an easy trap for a candidate and a company to think they align. And if you don't talk about what that actually looks like and means for each party, it's, you know, you can see how that would potentially be a disaster. But yeah, so I think kind of the goal is really to have companies and teams talk about what it means to them. And every company that I work with, it's really like, it happens every single time without fail. They'll say like, you know, I mean, it's pretty like standard. We do X. And I'm like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Like, that's not standard. Like, a lot of companies don't do that. So it's funny to just kind of step back and think about how, you know, the traditions or practices or processes that you do at one company may be on one end of the spectrum, and no other company does that. But if that's all you know, it's easy to think that's standard. Right.
And you've called out work-life balance and separated it from things like flexible work arrangements, which, like you said, would be more appropriate or an additive characteristic on top of that. So flexible work arrangements, you know, flexibility in work hours and locations.
Yeah, exactly. I think the work-life balance, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, it's so obvious to me because I've looked at this, but a lot of companies will kind of, after talking about it with them, feel much more comfortable choosing one or the other. Though at first they kind of just group them as one thing, as being like, yeah, we all have balanced lives, but that's just like too vague. So it's my job to kind of just dig and dig.
Yeah. And I appreciate that it also appears, and this is me reading into a lot of this, that you are also catering this to people at all levels. Like, I could see as a relatively senior engineer where I could go in there and I could say, yeah, fast-paced environment, continuous delivery, you know, continuous feedback, awesome, senior engineer. But you've got things like wears many hats. Like, engineers have a broad set of responsibilities and can learn from other groups. You've got cross-department collaboration where engineers work directly alongside their peers in other departments, as well as internal mobility and promotes from within, which are all values that a junior or a starting engineer might care about.
Yeah. It's funny. I think, you know, so I in some ways still consider myself to be on the junior side. When I started this, though, I created Key Values, I was really thinking about the more like maybe mid-levels engineers and starting there. But I do think there's been self-selection in terms of like who it resonates with. And I think a lot of senior engineers actually, because they've had, you know, 3 to 4 jobs already, or, you know, and they've kind of learned the hard way what they like and don't like this really speaks to them. And then for junior engineers, maybe I've noticed not necessarily college grads, but people who have changed careers, like me, someone who's already had work experience, not necessarily as a software engineer, but they've had work experience enough to know what they like or don't like. And so it does cater to different levels of experience with engineering, but I think it does speak to people who've had more experience, period, in terms of like working with different types of people, under different structures, at different company sizes, all of those things.
True. You have to know what, like, if you don't know what you don't know, that can be challenging. But if you have a general sense of like, well, I feel that this would be a good thing in my experience in past jobs, that's been a good thing. I would be able to pick the values that I care about.
Yeah. And now that I'm thinking about it, I actually don't know if that's a fair statement to make. Obviously, there's people, you know, you can be young and this could be your first job and you might know. But I think there's definitely a trend where people right out of college are oftentimes optimizing for company reputation and salary. And that's fair. But I think, and to be honest, I think that's what a lot of other job boards cater to. And that was kind of where I saw that there was this gap.
Right.
Yeah, actually, it's funny. People don't always walk with me to like come along this comparison of dating and job searching. But there's a lot of parallels, and I kind of think about it like when you're young, you kind of like fantasize about dating the most popular person in school, and like that's what matters most to you.
When you're very young, yeah.
Yeah, and I think it's kind of similar when you get your first job. Like, you want to work at the Googles and the Facebooks because your parents know about them and your friends know about them, and people recognize that name. And I think it's just like Then you have that experience and then you kind of learn and then you're like, oh, okay, that's not the most important thing that matters.
Right. And it's interesting because your values that you've chosen here show, in fact, that you don't have anything of like getting paid the most or super popular company. Like those aren't values that one can even check.
Yeah, that was, it's probably when I first launched, not having salary was by far the most popular request. But I think there's lots of other places that list that. And it's pretty much the most important part of those job boards and those job sites. So, there's plenty of tools that that's.
You've chosen actively not to touch that.
I have. Mm-hmm. Yeah, little controversial for some. I don't know. It's polarizing.
But these are opportunities, though, to keep things different, right? This is not just a regular old job board where I can go and put in it's not a front end with text boxes over a SQL query where it's like, if salary greater than and remote okay. This is not that job board.
Right. It is not. Mm. And to be honest, I think it's also just like, at least for how it is right now in 2018, like it is, if you're a software engineer, you're going to make a decent salary. Mm-hmm. Like the idea, I mean, you definitely can. It might not be your favorite job, but you can definitely find one that will pay pretty well or very well or ridiculously well. So I think on the range of what salary can be, that's just actually pretty narrow. Like, let's say it's anywhere, let's be extreme. Let's anywhere from 50K to 500K.
And that's pretty wide range.
Very wide range. But that's just one dimension.
Right.
Like I think everything else about, how you work, who you're working with, like why you work that way together, what opportunities are there. Like just, I think there's so much more there that's kind of where I wanted to focus.
Yeah, yeah. It also appears that you force or you encourage, maybe force isn't the right word, the companies that sign up to write a non-trivial amount of prose. Like there's a lot here. When they click, we're good for junior devs, they have to write something. There's a lot of text. Like I'm looking at 5-6 pages of text about a company right now.
Yeah, you're right. Force is maybe strong, but it is kind of true. I do. This is the part that's really interesting. Companies. So there's many, many more companies that have submitted their values to key values than actually show. Mm-hmm. And it's because when push comes to shove and I say like, you chose your team is diverse. Great. Prove it. Like, let's talk about it. Diverse in what way? Is it just on your engineering team? Is it across your whole org? Like, what kind of, why is this important? How do you promote it? How do you, and when I start asking these questions, people realize like, okay, maybe we're actually not that diverse. And then discussion with the team that when I work with them, they realize like, maybe we're not actually quite ready to put this together. It seems like we're not on the same page about what we care about most. And so that's as much filtering as there is. I definitely feel like my job is to ask all the questions that a candidate wants to ask, but might not feel comfortable asking.
Interesting.
So, yeah. I mean, for example, actually just work-life balance and diversity, those are two great examples where you might not feel like you're worried about what might the interviewer interpret that question.
If I may, when you ask a question, there's always or often an implication of there's a question under the question.
Yes.
And if you are new in the biz or you want to get the answer, but at the same time, you don't want it to spiral in a direction that you don't want it to go, that can be really challenging.
Exactly. And it's just you're in a vulnerable state when you're interviewing. So I think
it can be
hard. Yeah. Yeah. And you're being evaluated. It's just, So it's really like I see it as my job is asking all of those tough questions because I don't have it. I can be much more blunt.
Yeah. A big thank you to our sponsors because they make this show possible. And I hope that you support them the way they support us. Progress Software is the creator of the most comprehensive developer toolkit for building modern apps on the market today, Telerik DevCraft. With more than 1,100 Telerik.net and Kendo UI JavaScript components and controls, you can easily build modern, high-performance web, mobile, and desktop apps, as well as chatbots. The toolset also includes reporting solutions, automated testing and productivity tools, and comes with a range of support options. New this year is a free online training program for all license holders. With this, alongside thousands of demos and source code available, comprehensive documentation, and a full assortment of Visual Studio templates, you'll be up and running with the Progress Telerik and Kendo UI controls in no time. Download a free 30-day trial today at Telerik.com/Hanselman. That's Telerik.com/Hanselman. One of the sections of keyvalues.com that I enjoy the most, that I almost feel like should be even more called out, if I can give you actual live feedback while we're doing a podcast.
I love it.
Is at the top, it says culture queries. Up next to the top menu, it says like about and blog and submit. You click on culture queries, and I'm just going to pick a couple things that I care about. Okay. Committed to personal growth, promotes from within, and we'll say open source contributor. Okay. And then I hit see results, and this isn't a list of companies. This is a list of questions for me to potentially ask at the job interview. So you're literally giving me, like, I could print these out and like ask these questions. Yeah. You give me the questions and you tell me why I should, in fact, ask those questions. And this is, I feel like, a hidden valuable, like not hidden, but not in, in your face valuable part of your site. I was so impressed with this. And that's one of the primary reasons that I wanted you on the show.
Oh, well, thanks. Yeah, you're right. I should probably highlight that more. Maybe you'll see some changes to my site very soon.
Yeah.
I was just going to say that, like, in talking about how I ask the tough questions and I can ask questions more bluntly to the companies I work with. I mean, obviously there are people who, it's true, you shouldn't ask so bluntly. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of wanted to just create a resource that I would have, you know, I would have used and will continue to use if I ever look for jobs, you know, and something that is kind of timeless, but just thinking about how to really get the answers you're looking for. And make sure to interview the companies. Like, interviews are two-sided. It is a two-way street. And I think so many people forget this, and it's kind of, you know, in a way, it's kind of your fault then if you end up at a company and you're not happy, if you could have just maybe asked a few questions during the interview process and flushed those out, then, you know, you would have maybe not taken that offer. So, yeah.
It's so important. I also remind people who are interviewing, anytime I give interviewing tips, is that if at all possible, try to make sure that you're interviewing the person who will be, in fact, your boss. Because so often they put us through a loop of people, like, here's a pile of 9 people who are going to interview you, and then you'll meet your boss on like day 4 after you've gone through new employer. That boss has to be part of your interview loop, or you're going to have problems.
Yes, I think that is very good advice. And it's surprising how often that might happen.
Indeed. So I've gone there and I've clicked on open source contributor and engages with community. And I love this particular question here. You say, how did your team come to use your current framework? Okay, great, great question. But then you explain why. Why would I phrase it like that? And phrasing matters. And this is, I think, where your neuroscience background comes in.
It's useful for something.
Well, you say engineers are defensive if you say, why did you choose X? Like, justify Angular. Those questions can be like an attack, and that could make your interview go south.
Yeah. This question actually came from a friend who was like, yeah, don't ask it this way, because I did, and I really insulted my interviewer. And just, yeah, you can imagine how the rest of the day went.
Yeah.
So
I feel like there's a huge amount of work here. On the one where I put in for junior devs, is this good for junior devs, or does it promote from within? You say, did any of your senior engineers today start out as junior engineers? What a good, sneaky question. That's like a question grenade. Just toss into the group and like see what happens.
Yeah, no, I think all of these questions are – I think the main thing is there – okay, let me just take a step back. There's a lot of generic questions that you can ask. And your interviewers have been asked them hundreds of times, and they have, like, they basically open up their chest and they press play because they've answered that same question over and over. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you don't want a canned response. Like, you don't want them to have rehearsed a response. So I think a lot of the questions, the angle that I'm coming from is to ask something that's specific enough and different enough that you're going to get a very authentic answer because your interviewer is answering it on the spot. And so this is a great example of that. It's true. Like if your company says that you promote from within, like you better have examples of it.
Exactly. And I like that you are, it's like, if you ever see famous people, like, you know, like people from like the Avengers movies, and they're doing their junket, right? Where they're like they're standing in front of a screen and everyone's asking them the same dumb questions about like, what's it like to be Iron Man? Is it fun to work with Black Panther? Right. And then every once in a while, the interviewer will ask a question. And then the person who's answered 1,000 dumb questions before, it goes, oh, what a great question. And they light up. So you're saying you can get the interviewer like really on your side by asking a thoughtful question.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. So when I launched Culture Queries, I had like met multiple people in the days following say like, oh, it came at perfect time. And they asked, they, you know, they had interviews and that interviewers would respond. Like the feedback was like, I was really impressed by your questions. And it's like, it's so true. Like you can make such a good impression by having thoughtful questions. And you can be interviewing the company and you can actually have more information to make a good decision about whether or not to work there. Exactly. And so it's like everyone wins.
Okay. So I've gushed and I'm sure people who are listening are annoyed. Like, you know, Scott's been gushing about this site. Well, you know, go check it out for yourself. Maybe you'll gush as well, but surely you didn't write all of these yourself. You must've had a community that worked with you or feedback or like, this is an iterative process, right? You update questions, add new things and talk to people.
Actually I wrote probably 98% of it. I just sat down and made this like a full-time job for a couple of weeks.
Oh, wow.
But I definitely got help and guidance and I think I've just been talking to a lot of interviewers and engineers for the months leading up to it, that it kind of made me, it was like my brain was ready for this. But I definitely got some help from friends and, other, especially for spaces that I wasn't particularly, you know, well-versed in, like the diversity, anything around diversity, inclusion, even though I am a woman and apparently I'm a person of color. I didn't know this until that's embarrassing maybe to some, but I didn't actually know that I counted as that. Like I'm just not well-versed in that space. So, I definitely got some help there.
That's great. So you do the work is being put into this and then you're of course applying your thoughts and understanding around how, you know, neuroscience, like when you talk to someone and you express something in a certain way, how will that person take that? And, as you bounce back and forth, because like you pointed out, it is a two-sided experience, a job interview.
Yeah. It's funny. I feel like neuroscience itself, I'm not sure if that, maybe that was like too deep, but definitely, you know, in college I took social psychology and other classes around what makes like showing vulnerability and showing interest in someone personally. Mm-hmm. Of course, those are just, it sounds obvious, but people, especially when you're nervous in an interview, you'll choke up and forget about that.
Well, I think it's an important reminder, though. Like, I think that we all go into interviews and job interviews, and we've had, for those of us who've had dozens of them, for lack of a better word, we go in on autopilot, you know? Uh-huh. And taking a moment and reminding yourself of, sure, maybe this is obvious, maybe it's not, but when you talk to people, it hits them a certain way. It lands the way that you, the words you choose land a certain way.
Yeah, no, that's so true. I forgot what that's like. I mean, for some people, they do dozens of interviews a week. Mm-hmm. Like if that's your job as a hiring manager. Mm-hmm. So you're right. It does, you kind of do go on autopilot. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, I mean, we have a pretty limited time on Earth and many of those are sleeping. So just thinking about like how you want to spend your waking hours, I think everyone feels this way. Like you want to work with people you're excited to work with and learn from. And I think everyone really cares about this. So even though, especially for software engineers, like the technical interviews are so much about, can you do the thing? There's so much about like doing it side by side with people you like and can work with and can learn from. And so I think it's easy to forget about that second part.
Mm-hmm. I really like the way you phrase that though. Like there is the important, can you do the thing? Like that's above all, you're going to come here. I'm going to give you money. You will pay the rent with your money as long as you do the thing.
Right.
But this is less about doing the thing, but like while you're doing it, will you enjoy it? Will you like the people? Will it get you up in the morning? Will you be totally sad about getting up in the morning? Like those are really important aspects. That's the values that you need to make sure it aligns with, whether or not they use, you know, .NET or Rails, or whether or not they have, you know, remotes or not. Are you going to enjoy doing the thing?
Exactly. And I think it's, so the other thing that I've talked about with key values is like, there's this assumption that you have the luxury to choose. Mm-hmm. And I know that it's like, it could be frustrating to hear a very privileged person complain about how many options they have and like, you know, boo hoo, like what of the five great job offers do I choose from? It's so hard. And I know that can be frustrating and annoying to hear, but the truth is like a lot of us have that luxury, like, you know, and I think it's really your responsibility to exercise your privilege and, you know, make those decisions. Like it's, I mean, no one, like everything that you choose, you're the only one that has to live with it. So you better choose wisely.
Right.
And I think that's, yeah, I mean, most of us have the ability to A, choose between employers, but also just be able to choose doing something you love.
Right.
And this is, you know, a generational question. Like my parents, my parents were followed their hearts and did what they wanted. But I think there's definitely something, there's a gap. And nowadays there's a lot of people who do have the ability to do what they love and they have that option. It's not just, you know, making sure that you put, you know, pay the rent and then make sure your kids get food and then that's it. Like you really do have lots of choices for how you get that money. And so I think it's important to be choosy.
Well, and hopefully for folks, you know, like you say, we all have various privileges of varying levels, but hopefully people will be able to take some of the culture queries, the interview questions, and the resources that you've put together at Key Values to enable them to ask the right questions and hopefully get that next big job. And I appreciate you coming on the show today.
Yeah, no, it's so great. Thank you for having me.
This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we'll see you again next week.